Chapter 14. Red Roses for Her. The Burl Ives concert in Dublin will always remain one of the most exciting days of my life. It all happened in an unusual way. Among Dr. Collis's queer family, of which I too am now a member, is a small boy whom the doctor adopted in Belsen. He was very ill when the doctor found him, and recently he had to have a big operation in a chest hospital in London. Burl Ives, the actor and singer, had met him in Dublin before and taken a great interest in him. So now he used to visit him quite often in the chest hospital, where he often sang for the boy and the other people in the room. One afternoon, Dr. Collis came into the room at the chest hospital and found a concert in full swing. Burl Ives had everybody laughing and singing. Suddenly, Dr. Collis got an idea and asked him if he would give a concert in Dublin in aid of cerebral palsy. Burl Ives agreed immediately. On returning to Dublin, the doctor came to see me and told me what had happened. "The idea is," he said, "that Burl Ives will sing and I shall make an appeal for cerebral palsy, but I think it would be much better if you did."
"Me?" I said. "How?"
"With your foot," he said.
"My foot?" I said.
He grinned. "You've finished your first chapter about the letter A and your mother," he said. "If I read them that, they will know much more about cerebral palsy from the inside than if I was to talk to them for an hour. But you must come along with me and sit beside me so that they'll know it's your work, not mine." Arrangements went ahead at great speed. The occasion was to be sponsored by the Ireland America Society, and many distinguished people were to be invited. The whole city knew about it, but nowhere more than in our house. All the family said they must come to hear Burl Ives. Mother said she also wanted to hear Dr. Collis read my chapter. But it seemed to me that if all the family and friends got free tickets, they could easily fill the whole hall, and there wouldn't be much left for cerebral palsy. Fierce arguments raged for days. The day arrived. Mother borrowed a fur coat from a friend and tried it on. "What do I look like?" she asked as she stood in the centre of the kitchen. There was a hush in the conversation at the table as we turned round to look at her. At last, Peter picked up his newspaper again and said casually, his eyes on the page, "I see a bear escaped from the zoo last night." Father had bought a new suit and a funny sort of hat. He now appeared looking extremely smart. They then started to dress me up in a dinner jacket, which they hired without telling me anything about it. Despite my protests, I was squeezed into it by Peter and Tony. "Have to look proper," they said. At last we reached the hotel. The show hadn't started yet, and the curtain hadn't gone up. So I was put in a chair beside Mother, Father, my sister Peggy, Tony and his wife Sheila. From the other side of the curtain, I could hear people talking and shuffling as they settled into their seats. I looked around and saw that I had been placed on the right of the stage, the centre being left vacant except for three or four chairs, which were now being occupied by the president of the Ireland America Society, the film director Mr. John Houston, and Dr. Collis. Then I caught sight of something remarkable through the small door at the side of the stage. It was a man. He had a smiling, moon-like face, small eyes, and a pointed beard. He carried a guitar over one shoulder. He seemed to me fantastic, like a giant out of a fairy story. This was Burl Ives. The next moment, the curtain went up and the show began. I gripped the sides of the chair and tried to hold myself rigid. All I could see was a huge white blur of faces staring up at me. I felt I was being watched by a thousand eyes, and the old panic rose within me. Then Burl Ives began to sing. He had a wonderful, soft, mellow voice with a humorous twist in it. I just shut my eyes listened to his singing, and forgot my stage fright. Then suddenly he stopped and walked off stage. The president of the Island America Society announced that Dr. Cullis would address the audience on behalf of the Cerebral Palsy Association. The doctor got up and went to the microphone. The crowd before him was still in a good mood, laughing and talking. It wasn't going to be easy to interest them. He took my manuscript from his pocket and placed it on the stand in front of him. "I'm not going to make a speech," he said. "I'm not even going to make an appeal. I'm just going to read you something that will give you an inside view of a person crippled with cerebral palsy." The first chapter of Christy Brown's autobiography, he held out his hand towards me, written with his left foot. Then he began to read. For the first few minutes there was still a good deal of noise in the audience, people shuffling their feet and coughing. Gradually, however, as the doctor read on, movement and noise ceased. There was silence, complete stillness. I looked down at the faces before me, but now they were no longer just questioning faces with peering eyes, but intent, friendly faces full of interest, no longer looking at me, but at the doctor as he went on reading my chapter. They were listening. I was still tense, sitting on the stage in full view, but after a while I too began to listen, and as I did so, my tension left me. Had I really written all that stuff? Did all that really come out of my mind? It seemed as if I was dreaming. I listened. I remembered that day, that December day when I had first drawn the letter A with a bit of yellow chalk in my left foot, with Mother kneeling beside me on the wooden floor, urging me not to give in. I remembered the awful day I found out about myself, the horror I felt knowing I would be a cripple all my life, and the painting days and the lonely nights in bed, Peter snoring silently in the dark. Suddenly, I became aware that the doctor had stopped speaking. There was complete silence in the big hall. I saw somebody in the front row crying. I looked aside at Mother sitting upright, her eyes glistening. I looked at Father twisting his hat in his hands. He looked at me in a new way. Still there wasn't a sound. Now Dr. Cullis walked across the stage, laid his hand on my shoulder and helped me to my feet. Then the cheering broke out. It went on, and seemed to cover us like the waves of the sea. Suddenly, somebody from the audience brought forward a huge bouquet of roses. The doctor bent down and took them. He walked over to where Mother was standing. He held up his hand. The cheering stopped. "I think you will agree," he said to the audience, "that there is only one thing to be done. Red roses for Mrs. Brown. For you, ma'am," he said, handing the bouquet to Mother with a bow. The cheering started again. I could see a group of my brothers away at the back of the hall, cheering and yelling like hell. Mother took the bouquet, looking like a queen, as if she was quite used to roses every day of her life. Standing beside her was Father, his shoulders drooping and his head bent forward. Then Burl Ives came on again. He began to sing our own Irish folk songs. Now I could relax and enjoy it completely. I was at peace, happy. I lay back in my chair while my old left foot beat time to the rhythm of the tune.